You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. The support from our awesome community helps keeping the station diverse and independent. Thank you.
Okay, wishing you good life.
Quick way.
Yo weak sis.
Tanet e. Negat takote.
This is Words and Culture, a series on Indigenous languages, funded by SiriusXM through the Community Radio Fund of Canada and distributed by Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
Gaila Kessler, yo weeksis, nigo am Suzette Amaya, gayut klin lacha guasala glunishka koselish glukri. Welcome. Hello. How are you? I am Susanna Maya from Gwasala and Nishka, Kosalish and Cree. Well, we end our travels to the Kwakwaka'wakw lands as we began them, back in Alert Bay. I'm at Pee Wee Alfred's house, but this time I'm so honored to spend time with Hereditary Chief Dr. Robert Joseph of the Gwawinuk Nation. He is a respected Kwakwaka'wakw leader, residential school survivor, and one of Canada's foremost voices on reconciliation. He attended St. Michael's Residential School in Alert Bay for 11 years and has transformed his experiences into a lifelong commitment to healing and change. Chief Joseph is a founding leader and ambassador of Reconciliation Canada and has served as an honorary witness to Canada's Truth and Reconciliation Commission, helping ensure survivor stories are heard and remembered. Through sharing the teachings of Namwayut, we are all one, he has inspired understanding and stronger relationships across the country. His contributions have been recognized with the Order of Canada, the Order of British Columbia, multiple honorary doctorates, and the Inspire Life Achievement Award.
I've come full circle. We're sitting here in Pee Wee's house, and it used to be a residential school 100 yards down the road, maybe less. And all my life has been focused and wrapped around that experience and recovering my own identity, myself, actually, because conditions were really horrific. And literally across the country, thousands of little children were so traumatized. Our lives were destroyed before we even had a chance to focus on what we might want it to be. But for the most part, many, many of us have survived, and I'm beginning to be so excited about what's manifesting now, like from healing from residential schools in this community. And I've only been here a year. When I moved away after school, I never came back here. I'd visit once in a while. But I'm here now for about a year, and it's the most exciting community that I know. There are language courses, mentors, elders, and many young people really embracing the idea that we got to get back to speaking our language, right? And I'm absolutely in concurrence, because I don't think if you're a Kwakwaka'wakw, I don't think yet that you can know your full personal value and hold the intrinsic worldview that our old people used to have, right? Unless you talk the language. But in the meantime, we're beginning to do a lot of healing, embolden ourselves to rediscover who we're supposed to be proud, to be strong, to feel free, to pursue our dreams. And so it's been really exciting coming back to Alert Bay.
Dr. Joseph, or Bobby Joe, as he says to call him, is incredibly humble. He claims he is not a teacher, but he is a fluent Kwakwala speaker. And just by being around him, we learn so much.
We should just start with love. If you look at me and I look at you and I say, we're going to learn something together, T, because I love you. Because you're interested in what I'm interested in. You're interested in what I care about. Hey? And in the end, if we all do that together, we build trust. We create new relationships. And magic happens if we have dialogue that changes people's minds. We begin to listen to each other a little bit more. And we actually start to make changes, right? That's what reconciliation is about. But coming back here, it's even more for me intense, because we're doing it every day. Language groups, we have culture nights, three nights a week, one night for dancing, and we get together as survivors of residential schools every Thursday. There are whole numbers of activities in this community that's making it a real good community. They don't know it yet, but it's going to be a really good community.
Where are your roots as a hereditary chief? Share where you get your chieftainship and your community. Because, you know, I know you live in Vancouver, but you're tied to so many different communities in the Kwakwaka'wakw Nation.
When the anti-potlatch law was in effect, they actually swooped down on a potlatch in Village Island. It was Chief Dan Primus potlatch. And they had, what do you call those tattletalers? Informers, yeah. So they had them. So they scooped up a lot of people, our chiefs, matriarchs, and stuff like that, and charged them. And at the end of all of that process, I think there were 26 old people who spent 2 to 6 months in Ocala. It was an old prison farm, hey? And I remember when the old people used to talk about it, they'd say, oh, it was so degrading, humiliating. They made us feed the pigs. There's an allied tribe before called the Musmuk on the mainland, right? And they were aligned before the current day tribal councils were even defined, right? They were aligned through the origin stories. And so historically, they were always sort of one people, actually, but with 4 big settlements, right? And each of them all had territories, the 4 tribes, and each of them all had 4 clans in each tribe. So there were all these places where first ancestors manifest. All of us come from first ancestors as far as we believe. Somewhere in a territory, like in Hadda, where this back to the land campus, there was a sacred cedar tree standing. And over time, there manifest the first person, a person, and his name was Tsekame. And from Tsekame, there were 4 clans that evolved from that. So every part of our territory is defined by those first ancestor sites, and they're considered sacred, right? Of course, if you manifest as a nation of people, eventually, it's pretty sacred stuff. Right?
Would that be like those 4 sacred places would evolve to 18 tribes? Or just 4?
Yeah,
that area?
4 and 2 or 3, 6. Like I think there were 18. Tribes all together. Some of them were 4, and some 1 or 2 were 6. Yeah. So each tribe has its own story, right?
Oh, I see.
And I usually tell young people when I talk to them, Kingcome was an alliance with Guilford Island, Hope Town, and Wakeman Sound. Yeah. So each of them were sovereign as First Nations. But together there were an alliance of Musqueam, 4 nations, right? Yeah.
And then your chieftain, your hereditary chieftainship comes from where?
Gwawino. And my first ancestor was a thunderbird that descended. It's called Mount Stephen now. And as he was descending the mountain, he slowly took his Thunderbird clothing off and became a man by the time he was on the foot of the base of Kwe. And there were two first ancestors from that site, but there were another two from other sites. And that's how we think, or how we grew up learning about creation and first peoples, right? Mm-hmm. Well, even a clan was a semi-sovereign, but they were all sovereign in their own right. And we spoke the same language. We danced the same songs, literally, almost. Sang the same songs. Believed in the same things. And all of that created a really powerful, unshakable belief in the connection to territory, right? So, you know, your first ancestor, you grew up knowing the territory. And, of course, populations grew from those first ancestors, right? And so the Muslim are part of the larger Kwekwekiwak, and they're all similar. A Comox has a different dialect, and Kwatsino has a slightly different dialect, but Mekwekta and Snitsilnet, us, those people on the mainland, are similar language. And then you got the Lik'wotok down in Cape Munchkin River. Same culture, slight different accent.
Different dialects, different languages.
Yeah.
It must be quite the journey to come back to Alert Bay when you are a residential school survivor. And here in Alert Bay, they, you know, they took down the residential school. But how has it been coming back home to this area?
It's been an ongoing healing journey, step by step, place by place, memory by memory. All of those key things keep coming back, and you got to deal with them, or you become traumatized again, or confused again, or angry again, or upset again. And then you develop other poor habits if you do that. When I was younger, I drank really, really lots. I'm not proud of it, but I had a real struggle with it. And I never want to go back there. So when I get these flashbacks and memories, I try really hard to take it in the context that I should, that it's happened, and I have to deal with it now and move on from it. That doesn't mean we forget. We got to keep working on it, right? And I was really fortunate. I traveled all over this country for a decade, talked to all kind of tribes across Canada about healing, about residential schools. And I watched this whole country, our indigenous people, start to change. In the beginning, we were so broken, tears, sadness, despair, chaos, confusion, because nobody then knew what the heck to do about it, right? So we kind of just cycled in our life experience and the misery. And then one day I went to a big gathering in Alberta, and there were two beautiful, smart indigenous women. And they were talking about, you own it, you claim it. Own it, you claim it. I said, what the heck are they talking about? It's called trauma. Say it, everybody, trauma. And nobody knew what trauma meant yet. But they talked about it, and they convinced us. So now that you've heard about it, you better deal with it. You know what it is now. You might be able to do something now. Because before that, nobody knew what to do. Even if we'd heard about trauma, and we didn't know it was something that was really important to understand, to move beyond our misery, right, to start to heal. And from there, those two, I wish I'd see those ladies again. They were so powerful and beautiful. And they don't even know it probably changed this country by waking all of us up to what the heck was plaguing us, right?
Yeah. Yeah. You know, through being a residential school survivor in your homelands and coming here, you're such a great leader in, you know, in our ways and then also advocating for Indigenous people all across the nation with the Truth and Reconciliation Commission. And how did you preserve your culture and your language through all those years?
You know, I think about that sometimes, but I grew up with old people. They didn't even speak English. And finally, I ended up in a school when I was five years old, and then it was all English. I think in those first 5 years, it must be formative enough that whatever you learn, you don't forget. It becomes part of your DNA, I think. The stories, the lessons, how you respond to emotion or whatever. And it took me a while. And now I'm full-time in language, of course, with these young people. I had a hard time for a while. And lately, like really lately, I thought, oh, my gosh, I remember, the words are coming back. It's just that they've been dormant, right? And I've been asked, what's this, what's that, what does that mean, what is this, so often that I'm having to start to cherry pick what I remember, and it's growing. Eh? I can actually speak really fluently when I couldn't before. I'd struggle to get to pass the sentence and get to the next building on the next, right? So I think you it's in your soul, I think. And at some point, if you find yourself in the right place like I have, it comes back, right? And all the, you know what I remember first of all were all the terms of endearment, like Wadzid, monumental one. That's what they call us kids all the time.
What's the word?
Wadzid.
Wadzid.
Yeah, yo Wadzid.
Yo Wadzid.
And that meant monumental, as big as whatever they saw you as. You're beautiful, you're smart, you're big, you're it, you're Wadzid, right?
You're Wadzid.
And Glugwe.
Glugwe.
Translated supernatural one, supernatural gift. And so if they weren't calling you Wadzid, they'd call you Glugwe.
Glugwe.
And so you started hearing these words all the time before I got here.
Supernatural and you're powerful, Wadzid.
Monumental.
Supernatural. Yeah. Monumental, supernatural.
Yeah. And they were terms of endearment that you must have heard all day long. In the old days, we all had one language yet. When I was growing up, until I was five, right? Until I came here, I hadn't heard an English word before I came to school. All my aunties were broken English. I can remember that. But we were one of the families that really held on to the language a long time. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now that you're here in Alert Bay, it must be pretty exciting because you're amongst your peers and you get to talk fluently in Kwakwala.
Oh my God, it's like hero worship sometimes, just because you're old, right? And I'm really loving, though. I really care about people. I love people. And I tell them, that I don't beat around the bush. You know what? I love you so much. You're so important. Not only to me, but to your family, to the community. And I keep telling them about you. You know, you have purpose, you have value. Don't ever stop looking for that, because we're all born into this world with a purpose, and we don't know it unless we look for it, search for it, right?
Yeah. You know, talking to you, you're sharing so much about love. And I feel that, like, what's the Kwakwala word for love again?
Sakwala nukunklusa. It's sort of like
Whoa. Slow down, Uncle. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. How do you say love?
Sakwala.
Sakwala.
Nukunklusa.
Nukunklusa.
Yeah.
Say it again.
Yeah. Sakwala nukunklusa.
Sakwala nukunklusa. Sakwala nukunklusa.
Sakwala.
Sakwala nukunklusa.
Yeah. China.
Slakwala Nukwanklus.
Oh, right.
Did I get it?
Yeah.
Because I learned from Andrea Kramer, what's the word for spirit?
For spirit?
Yeah.
Bakwane.
Bakwane.
Yeah, spirit of the body. It distinguished between the body and spirit, right? So it's Bakwane.
Bakwane. I feel that your spirit has so much love, and that must have guided you into the work you do in reconciliation. and you're sharing so much about, like, just love everybody, and we got to build friendships, and, you know, like, for me, like, so many people see the word reconciliation as abstract. They think it's like, well, what does that actually mean? Yeah. But you meaning it more for love.
You know what I tell everybody when they're just starting out? You know where love starts? And they're all thinking, starts with you. For goodness sake, love yourself. Otherwise, you won't be able to love anybody else if you don't love yourself, right? And that's so true, you know? And all of our parents should be talking like that to our kids, because the kids will remember growing up if we tell them 10, 20, 30 times a day. Yeah. If you're grounded in our teachings, a lot of it is about connection and caring for each other, being one with everybody and everything. It's that word number that I call my book.
Yeah. So how do you say that word again?
Nimwayut.
Nimwayut.
Yeah.
And you're an author of book. That's the name of the book. Nimwayut?
Nimwayut.
Nimwayut. And what does it mean?
We are all one. It means with the universe, with other people, other nations, the animal world, the spirit world, everything. We're just one. We're creation, the creator's creation. How can we not be one? I know that seems far-fetched. We don't think in those terms, but we're not going to get there unless we think that way. No?
As Kwakwaka'wakw people, Nimwayut is embedded in our spirit and who we are. Like, I feel that creator and ancestors helped you be in a path to lead reconciliation and have the strength to form Reconciliation Canada, to write a book and be our advocate. Is there a word in Kwakwala for reconciliation?
Yeah, nobody's ever defined it, but it's called Nakhistandala, realigning everything more appropriately, like aligning it so there's no friction or difference. And Nakha is the root word, the true direction, the true way.
Okay, you got to teach me that word. Okay, so what was it again?
Na.
Kli. Kli. Na kli.
Stun.
Stun.
Da.
Da.
La.
La.
Na kli stun da la.
Na kli sta la kla.
Yeah.
Oh, I got to start it over again.
Yeah.
I've got to learn this again while we're together. Okay. Na.
Na kli.
Na kli.
Tan.
Tan.
Dala.
Dala. Yeah. Na klits dan dala.
Na klits dan dala.
Na klits dan dala. Na klits dan dala. And it means alignment?
Yeah. Realigning.
Realigning.
Things to be in a correct way. Because reconciliation, when you're unreconciled, there are some things that are wrong and you're trying to make right of those situations, right? It's all about understanding, mostly about understanding. If we can have the narrative or the dialogue, we're not going to change. We're not going to learn about each other. But if we're open and we really listen, we begin to recognize the humanity in all of us, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But if we're divided and we don't listen to each other and we go on hating or we're just angry, that's how we'll die, you know. And that's no way to live and die. Like, because residential school, St. Michael's School, beat the crap out of me. I had absolutely no sense of worth. Nothing. Not even one vibe about anything good about me. And in all these 10, 20, 30 years, it's all made up for. Because people let me in and be a part of it.
Mm. Hereditary Chief Robert Joseph has lived many lives. He is a fluent language speaker, a residential school survivor. He has 20 honorary doctorates. He has the Order of BC and the Order of Canada. One of the most meaningful moments for me happened recently when I brought my adult son Josiah and teenage daughter Sierra to Port Hardy for the opening of our Gwasalan Nakwata Gudzi B
big house opening. Now I'm learning to say gyutsi because that's what big house is in Kwakwala. Hearing Kwakwala spoken so fluently by our hereditary chiefs was incredibly moving, especially listening to Chief Bobby Joseph. As I listened, something stirred deep within me. It almost felt like my body remembered. I found myself naturally repeating the words with ease that surprised me. It reminded me that even though I didn't grow up speaking the language every day, it's still a part of who I am. Hearing those words spoken in our big house felt like a quiet affirmation that I belong there, that my voice knows these sounds, and that our ancestors continue to call us home through our language. That experience gave me so much hope. Today, there's a beautiful movement to revitalize Kwakwala. Learning is more accessible than ever through podcasts, YouTube videos, Facebook groups, language classes, and community gatherings. I often listen to the recordings from Pee Wee Alford and my late Auntie Gertrude Wakis, whose teachings have been shared online through the Kwasala Nakwata School. Every time I hear our language, I feel so connected to my ancestors. I'm committed to learning too. Even if it's just one new word each day, it's one step closer to reclaiming something that belongs to us. I love seeing our people embrace Kwakwala again, and it fills me with so much hope that my children and future generations will grow up learning and hearing and speaking our language with confidence. Language is more than words. It's identity, belonging, healing, and a living connection to who we are as Kwakwaka'wakw people. Next time on Words and Culture, we take you up north to Yellowknife and the land of the Dene. Your host will be singer-songwriter Leela Gilde. I can't wait to hear what this land and language is like. I love Leela Gilde. Gaila Kusla to Kim Wheeler for this opportunity to reclaim my language. And with the amazing elders and knowledge keepers, I'm so grateful for this journey. And Gaila Kusla, thank you. I am Suzette Maya, your host for the Kwakwaka'wakw episodes of Words and Culture. Hala Kusla, goodbye, and find me on my socials at Suzette Maya. To hear more episodes of Words and Culture, please visit www.wordsandculture.ca. You can follow us on all the socials or just search Words and Culture.
Words and Culture is made possible with funding from SiriusXM through the Community Radio Fund of Canada. It is distributed through Native Voice One, the Native American radio network. Words and Culture is produced by Kim Wheeler. Kaylin Belair is our audio engineer and editor.
Amiya.
Yami.
Kachu nautano.
Halakasla.
Kikaya kitamatunuhua. We'll see you later.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. Over time, many coastal cities have developed their shorelines and built seawalls to protect them from erosion and flooding.
So in Boston, for instance, a lot of the coastal areas used to be salt marshes and mudflats. A lot of those edges have been hardened into granite seawalls.
But Joe Christo of the nonprofit Boston Harbor Now says seawalls are inhospitable to shellfish, snails, and other coastal marine life.
A lot of times they just don't have those sort of nooks and crannies and crevices that really help nurture marine life. And it really hurts the biodiversity of regions where those seawalls exist.
So Christo's group is demonstrating a way to reduce the environmental harm of seawalls. They've worked with researchers, the city, and other groups to install living seawall panels at two waterfront sites in Boston. The concrete panels are bolted onto existing seawalls and have crevices that mimic rocky tidal habitats. They were installed almost 2 years ago and are already teeming with plants and animals.
Seaweed and mussels, oysters, snails, and different types of fish also being present in the water near the seawalls as well, so it's pretty exciting stuff.
Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To learn more about climate change, visit climateconnections.org.
You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, Burnaby. We are rooted in community support and engagement. Thank you for helping us stay on air.